Mallow, iris, orchid. Scientific plant images over the centuries. The aesthetics of scientific representations of plants and flowers are very appealing. Now, as ever, domestic and exotic plants seem within our reach thanks in part to perfect illusionistic representations. As a result of technical advances, drawings, photography, microscopy, and computer-aided visualizations enable the beauty of botanic details to be seen in ever more facets. In the history of ETH Zurich and the documents and images of ETH Library, you can find countless traces revealing the development of scientific representation over time. They show the great influence originators, customers, and users have until now had on our general understanding of nature. The same factors are also mirrored in present-day professional education of scientific illustrators. One example is the Master of Knowledge Visualization degree offered by the Zurich University of the Arts, ZHDK. Listen to Nicholas Habe, head of knowledge visualization at the ZHDK, who talks about the importance of this degree.
The knowledge visualization discipline at the Zurich University of the Arts has a very long history. We can look back on more than 70 years of building up the faculty. We originate from the degree program in scientific illustration. And I think it's fair to say we have a uniquely high level of design expertise and communication skills, particularly when it comes to the illusionistic depiction of knowledge. The illustration in the form of a drawing, watercolor or painting still has a certain significance in the area of botanic visualization. The illustration can also provide a wide range of communication ideas, such as the concept of simultaneity. So I can show a flower and a fruit in the same image, even though they don't occur at the same time, and I can show insights into plant structures. As a technique, the watercolor is extremely well suited to showing color nuances, qualities of materials, and surface texture, because it enables colors to be built up slowly and with great control in very fine, transparent glazes. Computer-generated illustrations open up an entirely new range of possible applications. It was in this way that we created a 3D model of the world's largest flower, where using gestures, the user can handle the model interactively. The user can watch the flower grow or fade and can retrieve specific information on the plant using targeted gestures. Overall, we can say that illustration and visualization have huge significance in the sciences. The image is one of the main media used to communicate science, and we as designers play a central part in this.
Since the Renaissance, botany has continuously expanded its repertoire of visualization techniques, which are now used side by side. The precursors of modern technical procedures like photography, microscopy, and 3D visualizations were drawings executed by hand. Herbal books of the Renaissance, in search of the ideal representation. The invention of book printing provided Renaissance physicians like Leonhard Fuchs and Otto Brunfels with new opportunities. On the basis of ancient texts, they successfully published 16th century knowledge of medicinal plants and what were termed herbal books, and in doing so promoted botany. In these books, the fathers of botany systematically supplemented the textual descriptions of plants with illustrations. But this practice was not without its detractors. One of them was the German physician Janus Conarius. He pointed out that a depiction merely showed a specific plant at a specific time in a specific place. This was not, he said, appropriate for a universal description of an entire species. Since then, plant species have been represented in scientific illustrations in an ideal format achieved by abstraction and construction. What is shown is not simply an individual plant, but an abstracted, though lifelike, absolute picture. As a result of the technique of woodcuts, however, This envisaged naturalness of plant representation in the herbal books of the Renaissance was subject to strict limits. Leonard Fuchs' first book of herbs, published in 1542 under the title De Historia Stirpium Commentare Insignis, featured over 500 plant illustrations. Written in Latin, it was aimed at an educated specialist readership. The popular German version of the new Kräuterbuch was published in 1563. A few copies, including ETH libraries, were hand-colored. Garden books, impressive volumes for wealthy sponsors. Thanks to engravings, much more detailed representations could soon be made and printed, but the ever greater expenditure for illustrators, engravers, and printers also led to higher production costs for illustrated botanical works. Countless impressive volumes were created and published only with the support of wealthy sponsors. These included Hortus Eystetensis by Basilius Bezeler, which came out in 1613. This book shows over 1,000 European and exotic cultivated plants from the representative garden that Prince Bishop Johann Conrad laid out around 1600 at the castle of Wilhelmsburg near Eichstätt in Germany. The Prince Bishop also paid for the publication, which did much to raise awareness of his garden and ran to several editions. Another garden, the Hortus Cliffortianus in Hartekamp in the Netherlands, gave its name to a work by Carl Linnaeus that came out in 1737. In it, the famous natural scientist cataloged the domestic and exotic plants in the garden and herbarium of his sponsor, George Clifford. The clear separation made by Linnaeus between naming and classification of plants is still used in biology to this day. Matthias Baltesberger, Professor Emeritus of Systematics and Plant Ecology at ETH Zurich, tells you more about the basics of naming plants.
A clear and standardized naming of organisms is a vital prerequisite for scientific communication. In 1753, Carl Linnaeus provided the basis for a standardized nomenclature with his book Species Plantarum. A species consists of two names, the genus name and the species name. This nomenclature is international and binding. For example, in Switzerland, there is a grass in the canton of Valais in very dry sites, Festuca valesiaca, the Valais fescue grass, which was discovered and named there and is known under this name around the world. In Kyrgyzstan, there are thousands of square miles of steppes dominated by this particular grass.
Carl von Linnaeus' detailed classification placed high demands on the precision of scientific illustrations. He therefore cooperated with, among others, Georg Dionysius Ehret, one of the most successful plant painters of the 18th century. The flora of entire countries in classification systems. Influenced by Linnaeus' work, classification systems were used not only to describe collections of plants artificially collected in gardens, but also to systematically classify and illustrate the flora of entire countries. Thus, Nicholas Josef von Joachim, director of the Vienna University Botanical Garden and the Imperial Gardens around Schönbrunn Palace, published the five-volume work Florae Austriacae between 1773 and 1778. 500 costly color plates illustrate this flora of the Duchy of Austria. From 1837, the botanist and zoologist Ludwig Reichenbach published Deutschland's Flora, also running to several volumes, but based on its own classification. Compared with these and other extremely expensive national epic works from the heyday of illustrated botanical works, the small format Sammlung von Schweizer Pflanzen, which came out in 1840, looks rather modest. The lithographer, Jonas David Labrum, published the first partial deliveries of this work by himself. But he was soon assisted by the botanist and doctor Johannes Hegeschweiler. The beauty of Swiss apples and pears. Even though the most expensive illustrated works appeared in other countries, botanical works were also commissioned in Switzerland that had a national orientation, scientific claim, and high-quality illustrations. An example is the two-volume Schweizerische Obstsorten, published by the Swiss Agricultural Association between 1863 and 1872. The preface to this publication of Swiss varieties of apples and pears and the characteristics of their visual and textual description also sets out the requirement criteria for illustrations in text. The most natural illustrations possible represent in their actual size. A. The side view of a mesocarp with calyx, seen from the side facing the sun. B. A longitudinal section. C. A mature leafed branch. The course of the leaf vein network must be shown precisely on a branch leaf in accordance with a photographic record. The brief text, as accurate as possible, contains A. The systematic or the local name of the species. B. The origin and distribution of the species in Switzerland. C. A description of the shape and size of the fruit. D. Details on how the fruits are used. The association commissioned the Swiss painter and illustrator Salomon Buemeyer, 1814 to 1876, to execute the drawings. The publication was assisted by a committee set up for this purpose under the leadership of Johann Jakob Kolb, professor of forestry at the then Federal Polytechnic, now ETH Zurich. It is probably thanks to this link that the original drawings were handed over to ETH Zurich when the project was completed. This was in keeping with the widespread tradition of donating original scientific drawings to museums, botanical gardens, and universities so that they could be made accessible to science and be preserved for posterity. Switzerland's prehistoric plant world, from fossil to oil painting. While Professor Kolb provided scientific assistance with preparing an inventory of contemporary Swiss types of fruit, two of his colleagues, the botanist Oswald Heer and the geologist Arnold Escher von der Lindt, turned their attention to the plants of the past, researching the prehistoric flora of Switzerland. The fossils that had been discovered in Uerdingen, in southern Germany, played a vital role in this respect. In the 18th century, these fossil finds were still being interpreted as witnesses of the flood. In the middle of the 19th century, however, Heer and Escher systematically looked for fossils in Uerdingen, created a collection, and evaluated them scientifically. Heer published the main results in the three-volume work Flora Tertiaria Helvetiae, Die Tertiäre Flora der Schweiz, 1855 to 1859, in which numerous plant fossils were documented graphically in over 150 plates. Heer explicitly stated why he had decided to use drawings and not photography as the method of representation. Only a handful of the images were prepared by me. Most were executed by a skilled draughtsman, Mr. Brugier, in my room and under my specific supervision. I could not use photography and nature printing for my purpose. Photography does not provide the finer veins, nor does it provide the necessary sharpness. And nature printing often lets us down, where contours and veins are indicated only by delicate lines. Furthermore, with both representation methods, leaves are often hidden in diverse ways, and not infrequently the image is confused and blurred by objects that are wholly foreign to the plant. With hand drawings, all these random formations can be done away with, and instead what is characteristic can be highlighted more sharply. But visualization of the Uerdingen finds subsequently went well beyond the work of a skilled draughtsman. The scientific results from the Uerdingen plant and animal world were so dense that they invited an overall visual reconstruction. The painter Adolf Rudolf Holzhab achieved this in his large-scale oil painting Uerdingen in Miocene about 13 million years ago of 1871. The work performed by Herr and Escher von der Lenth led not to a fantastic primeval ideal landscape, but instead to an educational picture underpinned by the state of science at the time. In the painting, now on display in the atrium of the NO building at ETH Zurich, it is possible, for example, to identify fan palms and many other plants, and to associate them with and examine them alongside the fossils still held today in the geological collections. But artistic freedom was in no way lost in the process. This is what Hess says about the striking mastodons in the center of the picture. But the most powerful animal of the time, the elephant-like mastodon, Mastodon tapiroides, also appears in the Erningen groves. The artist has two of them approaching the water on a headland, while the third retreats into the forest undergrowth. Photography or drawing? A long-standing discussion. Not long after its invention in the 19th century, the medium of photography challenged the long tradition of graphic plant illustration. Oswald Hare's achievements also show this. The question arose as to whether photography could replace drawings, with their demands on time. Photography is at a disadvantage when generalized features detached from the individual plant need to be expressed visually. This is what the two ETH professors, Hans Ernst Hess and Ilias Landolt, said in their three-volume standard work, Flora of Switzerland and Neighboring Areas, running to over 2,500 pages. Ms. Rosemary Hirzel prepared the drawings from herbal material and living plants. They are an important component of our flora. This is because good drawings reflect the external features of a species better and more clearly than comprehensive descriptions. Only where the characteristic features cannot be grasped by line drawings, colors, luster, are illustrations done away with. It is often details of importance to classification, e.g. fruits, hairiness, that are illustrated as enlargements. Much of what is in the drawings is schematized in textbook fashion. Whatever is significant is highlighted. To achieve the same objective using photos would have incurred intolerable expense. The same monochrome line drawings, now stored in the ETH Zurich archives, were also used for identification of Switzerland's flora and its neighboring areas, which is popular among experts and suited to field studies. The seventh edition of the standard work came out in 2015. Their didactic clarity meant that the same drawings were included in the textbook on systematic botany, also used in ETH Zurich. In parallel with photography, drawings have therefore successfully held their ground as scientific illustrations to this day. Professor Matthias Baltesberger talks about the advantages of drawings over photographs.
Compared with photos, drawings have a number of advantages. In a drawing, you can clearly show the relevant organs and features. There is no background, which can represent a major problem with nature photography. And it's possible to show organs at the level at which they need to be seen. A good example can be seen with this Umbellophis species. The leaves are beautifully aligned and flat, whereas they hardly ever would be seen like this on a real plant.
But photography has, of course, long since found its way into the domain of scientific plant illustration. This is shown, for example, by the photo inventory of the ETH Zurich Geobotanical Institute, covering the period from 1880 to around 1960 in the ETH Library Image Archive. Biologists were intensively using photography early on to record images of plants from all over the world. Photography seems to be the most efficient where it is used to document a plant family as comprehensively as possible in image form. An example of this is The Documentation of European Orchids by Hans Reinhard, 1919 to 2007. From the 1960s, Reinhard undertook a number of research trips through Europe as a sideline, during which he took more than 20,000 photos of orchids. he usually photographed several individual plants of a particular species to create a broad image base that was as representative as possible. This resulted in images of the entire orchid, as well as extreme close-ups of details. But these photos form only part of Reinhard's orchid documentation. He also recorded his observations and findings in the form of some 1,800 plant and flower analyses. These include over 500 flower analyses mounted in slide frames. The entire orchid documentation was placed in the ETH Library archives via the ETH Zurich Geobotanical Institute. Beyond visibility, plant microstructures in image form. Nowadays, images created with electron microscopes play a vital role in the representation of plant microstructures. Yet the invention of the light microscope as early as the 17th century had, for the first time, enabled insights into the internal structure of plants. Publications like Nehemiah Grew's The Anatomy of Plants in 1682 contained detailed drawings created with the help of a microscope. In 1764, his work, Das Neueste aus dem Reich der Pflanzen, Johann Christoph Keller dedicated a richly illustrated chapter to the newly developed universal microscope. But despite continuous improvements in optics, the smallest structures of plants remained invisible until well into the 20th century. Thus, in the 1930s, at ETH Zurich, Albert Frey Wiesling, 1900 to 1988, professor of general botany and plant physiology, researched the submicroscopic structures of plants with indirect methods. For example, by analyzing refractions, he developed models and drawings of the internal structures of cell walls. To promote his research in this area, Frey Wiesling became heavily involved in the development of the electron microscope. From 1944, he established the first laboratory in Switzerland for electron microscopy at the ETH Zurich Institute for General Botany. It was with satisfaction that Frey Wiesling found that the images generated by the new device provided visual confirmation of his earlier research. It was clear that speculations of the indirect type mentioned could not lead to recognition of submicroscopic morphology. It was the electron microscope that led to the great breakthrough. It showed the correctness of the rod model of cell walls and the shift model of chloroplasts, on which these structures, opened up as a result of indirect methods, were suddenly presumed to be right because it was now possible to see them. 3D visualizations and confocal microscopy, the possibilities of modern technology. With digitization, knowledge transfer is becoming, in visual terms, ever more attractive, more narrative, and faster in the 21st century. Established representation techniques are being refined by the demands of specialized research. This also involves experimenting with new methods of representing plants. Specialist software, web applications, and interactive representations are being used to depict scientific findings. Particularly popular in this respect are animated pictures, starting off, for example, with microscopic images or 3D models that make visible the dynamic processes inside and outside plants. Interactive 3D visualizations are the latest extension in the portfolio of scientific plant illustrations. But modern methods also play a significant role beyond teaching and research in science communication, an area whose importance is growing all the time. Visual appeal has helped and is helping to reach a broad audience in addition to specialist groups and to make complex connections comprehensible to everyone. Use is being made in this respect of a growing palette of visualization forms, often at an interface with artistic and creative endeavors. Juanita Schleffer-Miller from the Zurich Basel Plant Science Center talks about the techniques of visualization in plant research.
The relevance of scientific visualization today in plant research is that researchers can take, for example, 3D confocal microscopy and look at the process of plant photosynthesis as it's happening. And this is one of many examples where the researchers are creating the visualizations themselves to use as tools in their research. The trends that can be observed in plant visualizations today are driven mainly by technology. So as new technologies emerge that enables researchers to visualize other aspects of cells or cell processes. And on the other hand, there's a desire, I think, for slow media, for botanical gardens and exhibitions about plants and showing other aspects of plant science research. For scientists, the main target groups of plant visualizations are other researchers. And then for science communicators, the main target groups might be politicians or school groups or the general public. So, for example, this year we had an exhibition in the Old Botanical Garden in Zurich. It was called the Klimagarten 2085. And the idea was to bring global climate scenarios down to a local level that people could understand. What I appreciate from the artistic perspective on scientific topics is that artists bring a critical and humanist perspective to science. Science is based on objectivity, and artists bring a subjectivity. They bring science to a bodily and physical and personal level that people can better relate to. For example, I like to make cyanotypes, which is an old-fashioned photographic method that was first used in the mid-19th century in botany. And these painterly photograms, as I call them, show visions of the future of plants. So I use them to document in the climate garden. I think the perspective of artists and scientists differ in that they ask different questions about the world. They may be interested in the same topic, but they come at the problem from different angles, and they also have extremely different criteria about what evidence is, and that's a very important difference.
The continuing exchange seen over the centuries between players from science, technology, art, and design will also drive exciting developments in the range of visualization opportunities available in the future. This is true not just in plant illustrations, but also for scientific visualizations in general.